In sports, Illinois football coach Ron Zook says quarterback Eddie McGee is an emotional player who's gotten better at controlling his emotions on the field. McGee will start Saturday against Michigan State over usual starter Juice Williams. Zook says he hopes McGee gives the team a spark as it looks for a win and a way out of its 1-3 start. McGee is a more outwardly emotional player than Williams and often celebrates big plays in big ways. Zook says McGee has to keep some of that emotion in check when he's in charge of the offense. The coach says the redshirt junior has matured while at Illinois and is better at controlling those emotions than he was in the past. With last night's win over his old team, Minnesota quarterback Brett Favre became the first quarterback in NFL history with a victory over each of the league's 32 clubs. The 39-year-old Favre threw for 271 yards and 3 touchdowns in the Vikings' 30-23 victory over the visiting Green Bay Packers. Rush Limbaugh wants to become an NFL owner. The radio personality confirms he's part of a bid to purchase the St. Louis Rams. Cardinals manager Tony La Russa is going with 12 pitchers for the opening playoff series against the Los Angeles Dodgers. John Smoltz and Kyle Loesch will be available to pitch in relief in games 1 and 2, and one of them will start game 4 if it's needed. 17-game winner Chris Carpenter will start the opener of the best-of-5 series. The Chicago Bulls are overseas for an NBA preseason game today. They're playing the Utah Jazz in London. And NBA general managers are predicting repeats for the Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James this season. The league executives who responded to the 8th annual NBA.com GM survey picked the Lakers to win another NBA title, though their opponent is unclear, and saw James as the runaway winner of another MVP award. That's sports.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Joyce Foundation and the USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. You can hear the report and subscribe to the daily podcast at environmentreport.org.
Coming up this afternoon on The World from PRI, the love letters of Warren G. Harding. The 27th U.S. president had a mistress, and she may have been a spy for Germany. A trove of love letters chronicles their 15-year-long affair. Love, espionage, and Warren G. Harding, coming up today on The World at 3 o'clock. Coming up tomorrow in the 1 o'clock hour of the afternoon magazine, our guest will be Tara Brockman. She and her family produce 650 different varieties of fruits and vegetables for thousands of people in central Illinois and in the Chicago area. It is a work of love that now spans generations. Tomorrow on the afternoon magazine, the story of this five-generation Illinois farming family. Following the 1 o'clock news, I'll invite your phone calls for Tara Brockman. She's the author of The Seasons on Henry's Farm, A Year of Food and Life on a Sustainable Farm. The publishing giant Condé Nast has decided to shut down 4 of its magazines. It's not that the magazines were a bad read, but the accounting books were a terrible read. Most notable among them is the monthly Gourmet magazine, NPR's David Folkenflik reports.
Gourmet magazine is led by the culinary critic Ruth Reichel. It's been filled with recipes and luscious photographs and is beloved by upscale foodies, both creative and finicky, but apparently not enough of them. Its advertising revenues for the first 6 months of the year fell by more than 40% against last year. Elegant Bride, Modern Bride, and Cookie, a lifestyle publication for mothers of young children, are also to be closed after suffering significant revenue losses. Condé Nast also puts out The New Yorker, Vanity Fair, and GQ. It is part of the Newhouse family's media empire. The Newhouses are known for their largesse and pride toward the publications, and many of their editors have themselves become celebrities, such as Vanity Fair's Graydon Carter and the fashion arbiter of Vogue, Anna Wintour, who's inspired a documentary, a novel, and a movie. The recession, therefore, came as a shock to the system at Condé Nast. Most of the magazines that survived were forced to make cuts. Condé Nast hopes to hold on to readers, as it still publishes Bride magazine and the foodie Bon Appetit. The Gourmet name will live on through a new television series and the company's successful Epicurious website, which draws 4.5 million unique visitors each month. Not all publishing news is bleak. The smaller rival Savour magazine has seen a rise of nearly 20% in ad sales in the same period. David Folkenflik, NPR News, New York.
Green roofs are a popular but expensive way for building owners to prove their green credentials. Sean Ali reports some researchers feel they might do even more environmental good than they thought.
The rock, soil, and tiny plants in a green roof help insulate a building. That can cut heating and cooling costs. Researchers at Michigan State University think they found another benefit, too. Brad Rowe says the tiny plants absorb carbon from the air. Rowe says the plants are small, so this carbon sequestration effect is small, too. But he says green roofs are still better than plain Jane roofs.
You have all these roofs everywhere, and basically they're doing nothing. They're essentially dead. So putting plants on them, I mean, is one way to sequester carbon and just above ground, meaning the leaves and stems, the roots, and even in the soil that's on top of the roof.
Rowe says if Congress ever puts a price on carbon emissions, green roof owners might get credit for sequestering carbon, and that could cut a green roof's high price tag. For the Environment Report, I'm Sean Ali.
Some industries and businesses have been greening up their operations to save money. Now another big industry is getting into the act. American prisons. California has announced 16 new green energy projects at prisons that authorities say will save millions. Prisons in Indiana, Virginia, and Nevada are installing solar panels and wind turbines. But as Sadie Babbitts reports, the state of Washington is taking their green program a few steps further.
Jason Chandler has already spent 4 years behind bars for a crime he won't talk about. He recently was hired to work here in this organic garden at Stafford Creek Prison. Before this, Chandler says he was working here as a janitor. What are you doing?
Cutting the onions off to prepare them for the kitchen. Just cutting the roots and the stalk off. At least the wind's going, my eyes ain't watering.
The Stafford Creek Prison in Western Washington has this garden, a recycling center, greenhouses, and a beekeeping operation. Chandler says working these jobs beats mopping floors and cleaning toilets.
I had to ask my counselor to put me on the list. There's quite a few people on a waiting list to get positions like this, and they go by an application basis. And if you're willing to work, then it's a good job to have.
It's a job made possible through the Sustainable Prisons Project, a partnership between Evergreen State College and the Washington Department of Corrections. The grant-funded project has been running formally for more than a year. While it's clear prisoners like these jobs, officials say it's too early to tell whether beekeeping or growing vegetables will reduce recidivism rates. But prison officials say that wasn't the project's main goal.
I mean, my early motivation was money, surely money.
Dan Pacholke is the deputy director of prisons. It costs more than $30,000 a year to house just one prisoner in Washington State. The Department of Corrections was ordered several years ago to save money by doing things like conserving water and energy. To do this, Pacholke says they got help from Evergreen State College to green Cedar Creek, a minimum security facility in Washington. He says they got prisoners involved in cutting back their water use.
We started studying our use rates and consumption rates, and lo and behold, a year later, we had brought down our water use rates to an astonishing level.
Pacholke says the partnership with the college has another benefit. Prisoners are learning new skills. And Evergreen State College says one of their goals is being fulfilled, too, to spread environmental science to unlikely places, like prisons. Some inmates in the program get to do research on everything from raising frogs to growing native prairie grasses. There's already been a few success stories. One inmate has gone on to co-author a scientific paper and is now working on a doctorate degree. And while some prisoners are learning new skills, the goal of saving money is also being met. Stafford Creek Prison has cut the amount of garbage they send to landfills by more than half by recycling. Inmate Kevin Madigan says he'd like to keep even more out of the landfill.
The more self-sustaining you can become, the less burden you are on the people out there. And that in itself is a good thing.
Madigan rips open a clear plastic bag and dumps the garbage onto this conveyor belt. He gets paid 42 cents an hour to work here. But for him, it goes beyond just a job. Madigan says it's one way for him to make amends for all the trouble he caused outside these prison walls. For the Environment Report, I'm Sadie Babbitts.
It's 10 minutes before 3 o'clock. He's a movie star and sometime tabloid celebrity, but Jude Law wants you to think of him for the next few months as the Prince of Denmark. That would be the run of a new production of Hamlet starring Law that opens tomorrow on Broadway. Jeffrey London reports.
Director Michael Grandage says audiences in England think of Jude Law not just as a pretty face.
He's known for somebody who enjoys taking on great classical texts and interpreting them in a fresh and alive way. And eventually, when you do that for quite a bit of your life and you go into your 30s, Hamlet eventually looms up in front of you as something to be tackled before you go on much longer. And so it was with Jude.
Angels and ministers of grace, defend us. Be thou a spirit of health or goblin damned. Bring with thee airs from heaven or blasts from hell. Be thy intent. Wicked or charitable, thou comest in such a questionable shape that I will speak to thee. I'll call thee Hamlet. King. Father!
Law's Hamlet opened in London's West End to great excitement and acclaim last spring, and has now made the trip across the pond to West 44th Street. Shakespeare's famous character may be haunted by his father's ghost, the murdered king, but Jude Law says he wasn't haunted by the 400-year tradition of great actors who've played the role, from Richard Burbage, the original, to Richard Burton.
I think what's key about this part and what we discovered very quickly is that there is no definitive Hamlet. Hamlet shifts in the skin that he is holding at the time. He has the capability, and the play has the capability, to morph with the times. And I found it almost immediately to be that he had to come from inside me. So the idea of carrying this mantle sort of disappeared immediately.
Not that Law avoided outside research. He says he spent a year reading everything he could about the play, its history, and its various interpretations before he began rehearsals. Then he and director Michael Grandage spent time alone working on the part.
We started a week before everyone else, and we started on the soliloquies. And there are no stupid questions, he always says. Everyone's allowed to be an idiot and say, what the hell does that word mean? Or what am I saying here? And do we all get this? And so you start by pulling it apart line for line, word for word.
Now might I do it, Pat? Now here's a praying. And now I'll do it. And so he goes to heaven. And so am I revenged. That would be scanned. A villain kills my father, and for that I, his sole son, do this same villain send to heaven. Why, this is hire and salary, not revenge.
Michael Grandage's direction is all about clarity. The set is spare, and the director says he wanted to present a timeless modern production of Hamlet. Contemporary dress, yes. Blackberries, no. So audiences could relate more directly to the characters and the situations.
We also knew, because Jude Law was playing Hamlet, that we would hopefully be engaging with a lot of young people, and I didn't want their first experience in the theatre, let alone their first experience with Shakespeare, to be something that alienated them in any way. I wanted it to be as fresh and as modern as it could be, and so that they, first of all, I hope they will come back.
Keeping Hamlet fresh is part of Jude Law's approach. Geraldine James, who plays Hamlet's mother Gertrude, says she's constantly surprised by the range Law displays from night to night.
I never know what Jude's going to do, and it's often different and always amazing. Sometimes it's very, very, very emotional. Sometimes it's less emotional. Sometimes it gets more angry. Sometimes it's more frightening.
Jude Law says Quicksilver changes are all part of the role. Hamlet can go from high to low, from tragedy to comedy in the space of a few lines. And even as he faces the turmoil of a father murdered, a mother marrying the murderer, and eventually committing murder himself, Hamlet is always the smartest guy in the room.
The wit and the intellect that doesn't rely on falsehood or anger or anything other than a sharp, fast mind and an equally matched tongue.
What have you done, my lord, with the dead body?
Compounded it with dust whereto 'tis kin.
Tell us where 'tis, that we may take it thence and bear it to the chapel.
Do not believe it.
Believe what?
That I may keep your counsel and not mine own. Beside, to be demanded of a sponge. What replication should be made by the son of a king?
Take you me for a sponge, my lord.
Aye, sir. One that soaks up the king's countenance, his rewards, his authorities. But such officers do the king's best service in the end. He keeps them, like an ape, in the corner of his jaw. First mouthed to be last swallowed. When he needs what you have gleaned, it is but squeezing you and... sponge. You shall be dry again.
I understand you not, my lord.
I'm glad of it.
Law says it's his job to bring all the aspects of this tragic role to life for the audience. He's always mindful of how this prince, destined to be king, has been violently thwarted.
Every night I want to try and fulfill the possibility that he would have been most royal had he been put on. He actually had the possibility of being a great king and a great man. So that you see him being beaten down by the world. To me, one of the elements of the tragedy is that you see a positive human become sort of hardened and tarnished to being a murderer. And it's simply through him trying to cope with the world and surviving the world.
Audiences can see Jude Law as Hamlet at the Broadhurst Theatre through December 6th. For NPR News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
We hope you'll join us Sunday afternoon at 1 for Media Matters with your host, Bob McChesney. This week, Bob welcomes filmmaker Michael Moore. They'll be discussing his new film, Capitalism, A Love Story. Your calls will be welcome at 217-333-9455. Join the conversation Sunday at 1 on Media Matters.
Earth and Sky.
Variation in the ocean world, of course, affects penguins. That's why we think of them as sentinels, telling us something about the ocean environment.
You're listening to Dee Boersma, director of the Wildlife Conservation Society's Magellanic Penguin Project and a winner of a 2009 Heinz Award for her work in conservation. She's been studying the penguin population at Punta Tombo, Argentina, for nearly 30 years.
The reason Punta Tombo is so special is because there are around 200,000 breeding pairs there. That makes it the largest breeding colony for Magellanic penguins in the world.
Dr. Boersma said the challenges faced by penguins show the cascading effect of climate change on ecosystems.
These penguins are having to go about an extra 40 miles further than they did a decade ago. And so while the one bird is swimming further to find their food, the other one is sitting on the nest trying to keep the eggs warm and losing weight.
Boersma said penguins can't find food as easily because warming ocean temperatures have altered sex ratios in some populations of the fish they eat, creating more males.
And so, of course, if there aren't females, there's not as many eggs that are laid, and so you can get a really dramatic